Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. On today's show, we're focusing on viewing options that the whole family can gather around. In this hour, we're talking about two blockbusters made from books about chosen one stories, kids with special powers and troubling destinies. For our next conversation, let's set the scene with some music. That is the sound of Arrakis, the planet at the center of the novel and the new Dune, according to Academy Award-winning composer Hans Zimmer. For Denis Villeneuve's adaptation of one of the greatest models of 20th century sci-fi world-building, Zimmer constructed a musical universe of his own. He reached out to singers, instrumentalists, and composers in other countries for assistance. He used lyrics that drew on a language invented for the film. And he incorporated sounds as varied as pieces of rocket engine-grade super alloy being scraped together, 30 bagpipes played at once inside a Scottish church, and a cello run through a software to make it sound like a Tibetan longhorn. According to IndieWire, Zimmer, quote, could very well win his second Academy Award for this musical masterpiece. Hans Zimmer joined us about a month ago when the movie came out to talk about the score and how much he loved the book when he was a young teen. I started the conversation by asking him what he needed to know about this movie before he said yes to signing on.
It's sort of a funny story because I was the first person Denis approached, and he did it. We were working on something else. He sort of came up to me and very quietly one day said to me, "Have I ever heard of a book called Dune?" And I sort of went into teenage excitement overdrive, and I think I scared him a little bit with my enthusiasm. Plus, I knew a little bit too much. I really knew the material. So, and there's a side part to this story, which is I'd never seen the David Lynch version. I'd never seen the television version, because when I was a teenager and I read the book, it made a huge impression on me, and I sort of made my own movie in my head. And I didn't want that vision to be blunted by anybody else. But you know, knowing Denis and just the way he said it, there was something in the tone of how he approached the subject. I knew he was making the same movie in his head that I was making. So that sort of made it, you know, that sort of made it pretty easy to go, yeah, let's roll up our sleeves and get going.
Sounds like a kindred spirit.
Very, very much so. I mean, you know, usually there's a lot of, I mean, I don't want to go and, but let me say this. Usually there's a lot of discussion with the director. Should we do this? Should we do that? Da, 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 da. What are these possibilities? What are the, you know, do you like this? You don't like that, et cetera, et cetera. But with Denis and I, it was very strange because I would start saying something about an idea. He would finish the sentence. He would start saying an idea. I would finish a sentence. What would be, you know, and these were fairly abstract things. These were all about subtext, which we had in the book. And I think what became interesting is as well that we both approached it, because Denis read it when he was 13. I must have been around that time as well. So we both approached it not with the sort of, you know, with the hubris of knowledge and intellectualism of age and, you know, everything, but quite the opposite. The book put us right back to who we were at that point, who we were, you know, inventive, we were radical, we were fearless, we were a little bit too fearless probably. and it was very, very interesting to go back to a spot in your life before an enormous amount of events that life inevitably brings to you happen, and you were just purely in the world of Dune, and Dune became our world.
I'm speaking with Hans Zimmer. We're talking about the soundtrack, the compositions for Dune, the new film. So, I read there's all these different sounds, whistles, cellos, bamboo flutes, pieces of metal being scraped together. If you're game for this, I want to play the track Arakeen from the soundtrack and then keep your mic open. And as we listen, could you tell us what we're hearing?
Okay, I'll try.
All right, let's roll.
Because a lot of it is so, so mangled up and so, no, but go for it.
Let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
What's that? What am I listening
to? That's voices through a synthesizer. That's voices through, something, just completely distorting them and just keeping a tiny bit of the original element left in there. And I think a cello just helping it along a bit.
What was that rumble?
The rumble the rumble is a lot of things I just made up. I spent weeks, actually, that's completely untrue. I spent months making sounds on synthesizers. I made a whole sonic world. So the rumble is definitely a synthesizer called Zebra.
So, what went into...
We could play this game forever.
I'm game if you're game. How did you decide what sounds, voices, instruments, tones that you would leave pure and in their original organic state?
Well, there are two sides to this story.
Yes, please.
Side one is, again, the 13-year-old, reckless, arrogant teenager who goes and sees a movie called Star Wars. And I love it. I love this movie. John Williams is my hero. I love his music. I love the music. How can you not love the music for Star Wars, right? But at the same time, that sort of arrogant little teenage voice is going, hang on, it says, in a galaxy far, far from here, why am I hearing strings and French horns? Shouldn't I be hearing, sounds of the future or something like that, something more abstract? So I remember that because, I suppose there was a time when we all had our science fiction period and we, I read Dune, I was going to Star Wars, etc. So it just seemed to me that to do something that was really literally the words alien was important. So that's one part of it. The other part was Denis and I very quickly we both just knew that whatever it says, the main character in the Dune novels are the women. They are driving the story forward. It's the mother, it's the Bene Gesserit, it's the girl he will meet that will change his life. And there's a spirituality that comes from that. So, and one of the things I felt shouldn't be changing at all was the voice, was the female voices. So you have a lot of female voices. So even when his mother isn't on the screen, there is still, like a residue, a little echo, a little something of that voice in, in the scene. So it's always there. Plus, we try to have this idea that, generations and generations and generations of DNA that he is made up of, should be sort of present all the time, and that became the sort of the purity and the spirituality, and I really don't mean religiousness, but I mean just natural spirituality that I try to get out of the female voices.
I think it is so fascinating that you really have tapped into that moment of you as this 13-year-old. As you see, you're saying arrogant. It sounds like a pretty smart little brat. this time in your life that has, it really has been a source of inspiration for you in this?
Well, of course, it was a source of inspiration for me. It was an incredible source of inspiration. I mean, you know, everybody knows that Dune Litany, and everybody knows it because it somehow seems to mean something to them, and it certainly means something to a 13-year-old. You know, fear is the mind killer. I shall not fear. I think what I mean by the bratty 13-year-old is we don't take no for an answer. Oh God, I certainly didn't take no for an answer. talk to the 9 schools that asked me to leave. You know, I had an enormous problem with authority, and growing up in Germany, that is not helpful, if you see what I mean. And I was a dreamer. I kept dreaming, and I was reading so much, and books were my world. As we grow up, as responsibility gets sort of heaped on our shoulders to be grown up, there's sort of less and less time to really immerse yourself in these worlds. And I believe I'm speaking for Denis as well here. You know, we both found that spark again, that moment, you know, that in a peculiar way wouldn't let us go and seemed more relevant now than ever, and at the same time enabled us to ignore time, you know, ignore time, just be pure again. And so I did, you know, the score is not a score that is careful. It's provocative. You know, most of the things in there are pretty provocative. I don't think it's your normal Hollywood blockbuster score. You know, and at the same time, the book wasn't the book was a revelation to many people, and you can. I think the reason you're making a program about it right now is just proof of how it survived, how somehow it stayed within the zeitgeist, and how timeless it is.
My guest is Hans Zimmer. We're talking about the score, his score for the film Dune. There's a much written about scene when the characters disembark from a ship following a bagpipe player. And a moment later, we hear the sound of 30 bagpipes all at once. We must hear this now. Let's play it. Hans, that is so mighty and majestic. It just brings you there.
You know, and look, first of all, let's face it, the bagpipe, you see the bagpipe player on the screen, and the story goes that we had a very good assistant director, and Denis, in the morning of shooting the scene, said to him, and I think they were in Budapest, he said, I need a bagpipe player, because he suddenly realized that there had to be something that was leading, you know, Paul's family onto this new planet. It couldn't be trumpets and fanfares, etc., like this. But there had to be this sort of the idea of the royal arrival. And I love the bagpipes because it feels like, you know, it's such an ancient instrument. It's an instrument of war. It's an instrument of authority somehow. And it didn't feel out of place to be way in our past and way in our future. And yes, it is 30 bagpipe players. I phoned my friend Christian Henson, who lives in Edinburgh, and I said, can you find me some bagpipe players? And in the middle of COVID, you know, boff, there they were, in an old church. And that's that. but I think I thought that the idea, I mean, the first time I saw the scene with the bagpipe player, I just absolutely got what Denis was trying to do. He needed somebody to herald the arrival of the House Atreides. And it sort of fits perfectly. It's yet another one of those fabulous subconscious creations that Denis does so well. Things that get under your skin, then you don't quite know why they get under your skin.
I want to.
On the other hand, my daughter is still saying that she has bagpipe PTSD because it was the pandemic, and I had made my living room into a studio, and her bedroom's right next door. And at 5:30 in the morning, she'd come out and go, "Daddy, can we have a little less bagpipes?" you know. So yes,
I can understand her point of view.
I'm not saying it's pretty.
I'm happy about the end product, but I can see her point of view. If it was early in the morning. I do want to play something for you that's so fun that one of our producers came across, Simon came across, of this TikTok video. I don't know if you've seen this. It has...
I've seen most of them.
Yeah, yeah, 2.9 million views. Nice. Almost 500,000 people have liked it. This is a video. It's a young guy, young person, standing in the hallway of some building somewhere, and they're closing a door. And the caption reads, "A door
so
made
great.
By Hans
it's
Zimmer."
So great.
Let's play it. It's so funny.
I want his door. Of course, I'm going, yeah, he's absolutely right. Yes, that would be a great sound. This would be a great sound to sample and manipulate and mangle. And, you know, this could be the start of a new cue. I mean, no, it's really funny. And at the same time, of course, you know, it just goes to show that anything can become something that it's not. You know, I mean, one of the things that the score is made up of is a lot of doing horrible things to metal. I have a friend who lives in Northern California who he's a musician, he's a sculptor, and he's a welder. And all these things come in very handy when I call him. And he seems to have some very strange relationship with Boeing and Lockheed, where they give him all the cast-offs of metals that they try to use to build planes. And most of these metals I can't even pronounce. I mean, we're not talking about steel and titanium. We're talking about weird and fabulous things. And, you know, there are ways of making them scream or ways of making them, you know, it's not just hitting the metal. It's like, you know, you really have to have, to do what I do, you have to have a slightly bent mind. So, for instance, have you ever listened to the sound of metal screaming when you take an oil drum and fill it full of dry ice and the metal just contracts? It's a great sound. Do you mean? And something like Dune, of course, lends itself much more to the experiments like that than the Nancy Myers movies I've done. So, you know, the sonic world, just like the visual world that Denis created, I mean, I think they go pretty hand in hand. You know, and the one thing I didn't have to worry about, I didn't have to worry about being pretty. I didn't have to be worried about being overtly epic. I didn't have to worry about following anything else. I never heard the previous scores and I never saw the previous movies.
There'll be another movie, though. Dune 2 was officially announced on Tuesday for release in 2023. You tweeted, "Thank goodness, I have some music left." Smiley face emoji.
Well, yeah, no, no, I have too many ideas left.
Ah.
You know, and let me just say this. I think it's very important that it becomes a movie and that it becomes a cinematic experience, because we made Dune for the cinema. And then suddenly, as you probably know, everything changed with the pandemic. Everything changed, and suddenly we had, you know, this day and date thing that you could watch it on HBO Plus. And there's something very interesting about, if you think about it, I mean, it's just really very obvious. The movie on a small screen will feel much longer than on a big screen, because on a big screen, it takes your eye quite a while to wander across the screen and take everything in. While on a small screen, you know, you're sort of looking at everything. So the rhythms that Joe Walker, our editor, uses to edit with, or the rhythms that I use, are completely disturbed when it's on the small screen. And we kept thinking that what we wanted to do is, I mean, the cinema is this, it's one of the last experiences left. It's like a rock concert. You know, everybody gets together and we all feel it together. You'd feel really weird being the only person at a rock concert. Not as bad as the band would feel if there was only one person in the audience. But you know, it's a communal experience. And I remember when we were doing Inception with Chris, and I thought, wow, we're making a movie about shared dreaming. We're making a movie where the audience and us, we're all in this together. And it's this weird thing. The lights go off and a story starts unfolding in front of your eyes on the screen. And you don't see anybody around you, but you feel them. I mean, you know, and we as filmmakers do this all the time. I mean, we test screen a movie. And it's really sitting amongst the audience. You can really quickly feel the bits which are working and the bits which aren't working.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to say anything to you. You just know, you know. And so it's this very important art form, you know, of the 20th century and now the 21st century, that goes way beyond, you know, is it an economically viable thing? It's something that we need to protect.
And preserve, I mean, just like, right? Yes.
You know, just like film music protects the orchestras.
Uh-huh.
I mean, orchestras are a very expensive hobby, but films on a daily basis commission orchestral music, so it keeps it relevant, you know.
Yes, or, the name of the film.
Know, I go out tour and take an orchestra and a choir into the desert at Coachella because I thought nobody started before, so it seemed like a good experiment.
That was my conversation with composer Hans Zimmer, who wrote the score for the new movie Dune.